my name's Bernadette Russell. Welcome to episode 11 of How to Be Hopeful, a podcast all about hope, how to find it and how to keep hold of it once you've found it. I've been really lucky the last couple of years to work as a freelance community theatre director at the Royal Albert Hall. And that project introduced me to an amazing place called Penfold Community Hub. Penfold is a residential sheltered housing place for seniors, but it's also a place where that's open for the wider community, particularly for older people, and has an amazing range of activities that go on. It's a kind of utopia with people of all kinds of backgrounds, with all kinds of histories, cultures, ethnicities, ideas, skills and talents, sharing a really safe space in which they're able to learn stuff and just have fun. And I've been absolutely overjoyed to have been part of that and to have worked with the staff and the amazing residents and participants there. And this week I'm really lucky to be joined by Dennis Kane. And this is our conversation about what goes on at Penfold Community Hub and how amazing it is there. I hope you enjoy. Okay, so could you just introduce yourself, tell me your name and how you are today?
My name is Dennis Kane and I'm feeling very good today.
Oh, good, glad to hear it. And I just wondered if you might be able to tell us a little bit about your work, Dennis, and what your job entails.
Okay, so I work for an organisation called Notting Hill Genesis, mostly does housing, social housing, but also runs lots of community and social care support schemes across London. And this, the particular project I work on is in North Westminster. It's called the Penfold Community Hub. It works basically with supporting older people in the Pacific area of North Westminster, but also in some detail around the Church Street. Church Street neighbourhood. We work to provide opportunities for older people to basically remain independent and with a good quality of life, helping them to promote their own well-being and their health, and do that primarily through a series of activities, a fairly wide range of activities, to engage people, to do exercise sessions, a big part of it. We also do projects around gardening, quite a number of gardening projects. We're very fortunate with our garden. And basically to have different things happening where people can get involved and feel part of a wider community.
And I have to say, I think we'll talk a little bit about some of the things you do, which is fantastic. And I know with my relatively short experience of working with you, I think it's absolutely brilliant what you do. Just fantastic. Before we come on to that, I just wanted to talk a little bit about you, Dennis, because it's a really interesting role, I think, and job. And I wondered if what your journey was to that job. Was that a field that you always wanted to work in, and how you ended up there, I suppose?
Okay. It's a good question. Sometimes things come along in life where you don't do an awful lot of planning, but they fit into something when you look back. Have actually been part of a long thread in your life in terms of wanting to do things. So practically, since I came to London, my life in Dublin was a bit more sort of formalised, working in an administration, but doing a lot of trade union and political activities. And when I came to London, I tended to get more involved in community activities. And all of the projects I worked in always had a community focus, even when working for local authorities. I worked for a number of different local authorities, as well as a number of different charities. But there was always a quite strong theme about engaging with older people and providing opportunities for older people to get involved in running their own activities and determining some of the things that they want to see in their own community. So a strong, I studied community development at a college in London, and a strong emphasis is to create opportunities where people can start doing things for themselves and start to actually talk about the sort of things they want to see going on in their own communities. And doing that, the last 20 years I've been working with older people, but in the local authority context, it was working across different generations. So it's still quite an important part of our work in terms of intergenerational work. So it is all of that theme about not just delivering opportunities to people, but engaging people in doing things, developing things. A lot of our activities are self-run, like cook and eat and sewing cafes and gardening projects and community singing. They run it themselves, and we're just there to provide, you know, a safe, welcoming, inclusive space to enable them to do that.
Yeah, it's great. So it sounds like, I think I'm correct in saying that for you, the important thing is it's participant-led.
Yes.
Yeah, which is really beautiful, I think. It's really successful at that. Could you just sort of specifically talking about Penfold, Dennis, which is where you and I met, could you just explain to people that are listening what Penfold is? Because it's residential as well as a community centre, sure. Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and that's another part of the work. I mean, both in the current post, which is, as I said, the Penfold Community Hub, which is located in a residential facility also run by Notting Hill Genesis, which is primarily for people who've got long-term health conditions, often conditions like dementia and Parkinson's. And the community part of the centre, the hub part of the centre, then is used by people from the local community, but most importantly as well by people who are living in the residential side of the accommodation. So that provides an opportunity for people, often in the residential context, people who get isolated when they go into a residential home, who lose contact with the local community, become very isolated. Here you have an opportunity where people are actually linked up with the local community. The community in many ways provide a lot of support to the people in the residential accommodation, not just around care and support, but just around quality of life support. So even if it's just someone coming into the door and stopping and saying good morning to one of the residents and chatting, to a later stage where the residents themselves join in, for example, in the performance of the community singers, or they enjoy the garden, which has been done by people in the local community. So it breaks down that sort of isolation, and that's quite an important part. My previous job was to do something similar in Bethnal Green, which was to run a day centre as well as a community centre, which, you know, at the time wasn't very, progressive, which was a progressive idea. And that, again, you had day centres which got very isolated from the community. You had to be at a certain risk to get into the day centre. But when you actually bring community, people who walk in, who independently join the activities, together with people who perhaps have a higher support need, you actually involve in the community and people in the community in delivering what in essence is a community service. And then you just greatly reduce the level of isolation that people experience when they go into that.
Seems like such a brilliant model, Dennis. Just such a great idea. You know, I've seen it in practice, but also the way you describe it. I wonder, do you know if that, are there many places like this, you know, where there's a sort of combination of housing and community centres? Because it does seem to work really well, as you described. I wondered if you knew if there were many of them.
There are a few around. The one that I worked on, Bethnal Green, is called the Sundial Centre, and that again is not a residential. It's more a day centre, come community centre. And there are a few others around. I mean, the model of community hubs inside a residential facility is there and has been researched by different housing research groups and that. And it is tremendous value. And it's without going off on too much of a tangent, really, is it's about enabling people in the community. When a lot of the old traditional sort of family support relationships are broken down, people, you know, different generations no longer live close together, people perhaps live in different countries in terms of family support systems, then you can actually work on the basis of engaging people in the community in a way which they provide, not replace that sort of support, but can come up and provide a whole degree of additional support. I'm not here talking about in terms of residential people who, you know, do personal care stuff or that sort of stuff. It's just that that big thing often that gets ignored about quality of life. Quality of life in terms of your relationship with other people, in terms of your relationship with your community, in terms of your whole history about, you know, you certainly if you're in a residential, you're taken out of what has been something your whole life and put into a place which is very different. And we know from, you know, research into hospital, when people go to hospital, they lose a lot of their independence, they lose a lot of their confidence. And when that happens in residential, it can actually be quite damaging. But if you build into that opportunity a whole range of different, what I would call low-key support, someone saying good morning, someone chatting, how are you, you actually just has a very, very positive outcome. And a slight sort of, just to bring it up to date in terms of what's going on at the moment with the virus, is that what I've been able to do is to all of the activity groups now have a WhatsApp group supporting each other in this current time. So we've been able to bring that into the current situation. So that degree of support, we can't do very much around the residential because of the whole nature of the virus and the self-isolation thing. But in terms of people in the community, they're all now chatting to each other on WhatsApp or doing telephone discussion groups. So the bringing together of people is, in a time when there can be a reduction in support, it enables people to develop and maintain and increase their own support for each other, which is one of the positive
problems. That's fantastic. And could you give us a little idea? I know there's lots of things, Dennis, so there's probably quite a list for you to go through, but I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about the kind of activities that you facilitate or that happen at the community hub, because I think it'll be really interesting to people for people to hear this sort of really wide variety actually of stuff that you get up to.
Sure, yeah. I mean, we obviously took the core funding for the hub comes from the local authority, Westminster City Council. So we have to work with them around some of their priorities, and some of those priorities, which are for people themselves, around maintaining mobility, for example. So we run, I think, 11 different exercise classes, which range from very basic, fun sessions around chair base, around, theatrical throwing balls and shouting and screaming and things like that, up to sort of much more sort of sophisticated falls prevention programs and right up as far as Zumba. So, and again, that fits in with in terms of what people want. One of the thing that comes to me quite a lot in terms of meeting new people and what is the motivating factor for how do you get that's, another whole element is how do you engage with people to get them involved, is identifying what their motivation is. And for a large number of people, the motivation is to remain mobile, to be able to do the things they always did, to be able to get on the bus without worrying, to be able to feel confident in a crowd in a supermarket. And so there we're trying to match what the local authority wants in terms of their things to actually meeting what the people themselves want to do. And also nowadays, a lot of the stuff we do, which is about, with a significant increase in numbers of people who've got dementia or memory loss, who still live in the community, who are not in specialised residentials, but live in the community, is about providing opportunity for people to engage at a level that they feel confident in being able to do. So we have an art group, which, because of reduction of funding, it's self-supporting. But they're now, organising themselves. They bring in their own materials. Currently on WhatsApp, they are photographing their work and WhatsApping the photographs of the different pieces doing right around each other. The garden is a big part of Penfold. It's a very, very large garden, which, is the residence garden, which was, about 8 years ago, very boring corporate planting. And gradually people from the local community come in and said, look, it'd be nice to do this, it'd be nice to do that. And now we have two really strong gardening groups there. One which is focused on, flowers and creating a space where it's nice to sit there. And there's a pond with goldfish, which is very relaxing. It's great for family members to come. And the second part of the garden, which is, again, another exciting intergenerational project with younger people and older people growing vegetables with the support of a community project. And we have got funding for that. And so you have this great, one of the things that somebody says about Penfold when they come to it is the energy level. And I think that's quite important, is that people that feel there's something going on, there's something that they can engage with. There's the garden, there's the art, there's a community singing group, which meets on Saturday mornings and then goes out and does performances at care homes. They did a performance at the Lord's Cricket Ground. There, that's self-run. They get money from the local councillors. We just host it. We support it, promote it, and they just do their own thing. There's a Cook and Eat group, amazing Cook and Eat group, who thanks to like partnerships with local businesses, we have teams coming in, and every month they'll cook a meal for 26 people, which can be from the menu from all over the world, introducing people to different types of food, getting people, often with particularly with people with dementia, they're losing interest in food. So we try to recreate that food, that interest through things like that. So the whole thing is about it goes from coffee mornings to, we used to do trips to Bruges. That is the extent to which, you can get involved in doing things. So a lot of it's aspirational as well. It's like, it's about people like your project, which I think is really a project, the project you're working on, is about people having that want to do something that they've never done before, perhaps. And they have this talent and they have this interest, which, the environment was never there for them to be able to develop it. I remember doing, tell me if I'm talking too much, by the way.
No, not at all. It's lovely to hear you.
I remember doing pottery with in Battersea when I worked with the Peabody Trust, and we ran these pottery classes. And we got people coming in who'd never touched modelling clay in their life. And there was this really nice Scottish gentleman who came along, and he did such incredible stuff. And we organised an exhibition, and the mayor came and opened it up. And, it was absolutely incredible in terms of what it meant for him in terms of at that stage of his life being able to do things that he never dreamt possible. And
I think it's really important, Dennis, and it connects very much to, as you know, I'm thinking about and considering and writing about hope at the moment. And for me, this is a really sort of important consideration, one that people know that it's possible to have, fun and excitement and engagement in older life, and for older people themselves to know that there are things out there that they can do. It feels really hopeful. So it feels like an incredibly positive thing. And I suppose my engagement in it and working with you is, the sort of amazing creative projects that I've been lucky enough to do with groups such as yours. And I wonder if just focusing for a moment on the sort of creative stuff, like many of the things you've mentioned, do you think there's something about sort of creative practice and whatever that is, painting or doing a play or singing, that is particularly beneficial for older people?
I think it is. I mean, I think, a lot of the stuff we do ranges from important things like, as I said, maintaining your mobility. That's like sort of fundamental thing. And then, and it's not necessarily the same person, but it can be the same people who then think once they, if that's a challenge maybe for many people who sort of suddenly see the nature of getting old means that they become less, that they need more support or become slightly less independent, and being able to try to stop that spiraling downwards or trying to actually create a greater mobility or a greater engagement in what's going on, so they sort of becomes a much more positive thing. That then links into the creative side, which is about being able to again take on, building up the confidence and you start with the motivation and then you build up on the confidence and then you open up lots of other avenues and creative avenues that often can depend about, we did have a funded art group, now we lost the funding, so we have a self-supporting art group, and that I think is incredible that we keep it going and people are still coming, supporting each other. And in the same way with other projects where we can bring in people to, to like such as yourself and into engage with people, and then that expertise and that ability is just helping them to actually reach out and do things they sometimes they didn't think they wanted to do. We're working here with a group two in the current project, and there's some of the people in group two who you've met very slightly at the moment, but who are, you know, needs a bit more, you know, confidence and a bit more push from my part to say, oh, give it a go, try it out, you'll love it, it works well, it's, you know, it may not be, you know, you don't see yourself doing that at the moment, but give it a go and try. So you're working all the time, and so the creative side of things is important in that it and, you know, again, I do believe that in terms of working with older people, in terms of particularly in the sense of people from a working background who didn't get opportunities to do things in early life, who left school very early, who may have had a bad experience about joining other projects, particularly people who, you know, got discriminated against when they tried to join and engage with things. And that's a really important thing for the Penfold Hub, is that we are seen to be totally and absolutely inclusive. You know, some of the feedback we get from our users, that's a very important element to what we try to do there. And so it's about that opportunity for people who, for whatever reason, you know, family reasons, or other reasons, that they never got a chance to do things, that at this stage in their life, that window is opened up for them to try that out. And, you know, and that has a really positive things in terms of how people feel about themselves. And
yeah, I think that expression that, you know, we've both heard, the age of creativity, is a very powerful and useful expression, really, to sort of, because it kind of encapsulates all of that stuff. Here's the chance for people to do things they may not have had the chance to do before. But also some, I know it's not true of everyone, but some people, they have the time for the first time as well, don't they? Because yes. They've been so yes. Occupied. So I think that's really positive. I know this is a little bit like asking you probably to choose your favourite record, Dennis, but I wondered if you could perhaps tell us a little bit about what's one of your absolute favourite either stories of someone being transformed by a project or a project that you've either seen or be part of with the residents or participants at Penfold that's really made you think, that's fantastic, look what's happened there.
Oh, gosh.
I know it's hard to choose, isn't it? Yeah. So
I think often it's about someone who is struggling with sort of managing life, you know, in terms of how they feel about themselves. And so we do take quite a few referrals in from social services. And there was one woman who came in and she, you know, she used to sit in the back of the room. And she initially came into the sewing group, and we got a wonderful bunch of people who run the sewing group, and gradually she was, you know, supported by other people into being part of and to you know, talk about. She was interested in crocheting, was her skill and interest, and that's all sewing groups all about sharing skills now. And then she joined another thing called Cloth of Dreams, which was a project where with different materials you used, you started to lay out some of the in your life. So it was a collage, but it represented a bit of your life or key elements in your life, and then that became part of a bigger exhibition. And you know, this person was referred because it was very isolated, with, you know, lots of other issues, mental health issues and things like that. And the most recent thing we had a telephone discussion group as part of the current scenario, and we had a specific sewing group, and she was in this group, you know, engaging in an online telephone discussion and talking about the work she was doing at home and asking questions. And I thought that was quite an amazing, that was probably about 2 years, but quite an amazing movement for someone who struggled to just be able to walk into a room and to be able to engage in a social environment, to someone who, I mean, these telephone discussion groups, I'm sure you know, is if you have a large number of people in the room, it's sometimes difficult to be able to get your word in, get a point in edgeways and that. But she was extraordinarily very confident. I thought that was quite
that's
quite
an amazing transformation, Dennis.
And it was about, you know, the sewing group, I'm chatting to people, but I'm not involved, and, you know, we don't have anybody involved in that group. It is ordinary people given an environment, and that group, by the way, raises hundreds and hundreds of pounds every year for the centre by, you know, making things and selling them, you know, a garden party. So, and you know, you can stand back from that, and it's there. It exists now in terms of its current form, in terms of the WhatsApp, and you know, when things get back to a more normal stage, to when people will get together again and be able to talk about what's happened and sort of, and the ability to be able to talk in these times, isn't it?
Yeah.
For that particular person, she may not have had any, you know, were she not involved in that group, and now she's on WhatsApp, she perhaps wouldn't have been able to, she may not, I don't know, to have had a chance to talk to anybody else, you know, so very, very positive.
I think that's a wonderful story. It's also very encouraging to hear. I'm very, you know, it's awful that funding cuts have happened, but it's actually very encouraging to hear how, in spite of that, how many things have managed to survive.
Yes.
Because,
yes.
You know, and sometimes I think if people have, as you said, been given the confidence and begun skill sharing and teaching each other stuff, then it's possible that things can continue even if certain supports fall away. So it's really fantastic to hear that has still happened. I just wanted to, just because you've mentioned it a few times, Dennis, I think we can't ignore the coronavirus because we're still in the thick of it, aren't we? And I've been thinking about that a lot in terms of the communities that you and I work with. There was a couple of things I wanted to talk to you about. One, I think I'm kind of aware that it's particularly impacted care homes and sheltered housing, and there's some very alarming and tragic news coming from those arenas. But I also feel like it shone a light onto it, the challenges and the difficulties and what people need. And I wondered if amongst it all, acknowledging that there are tremendous challenges and difficulties and there's been some really tragic things happening, but that whether you can see any hope for any positive change as a result of the pandemic, having opened up a conversation about what we need to change.
Oh, that's the big one, isn't it?
Yeah, I just
because it operates at so many different levels, like at the political level as well as just the community level. But I hope so. I could worry, but like things that are going on in terms of, there's some I've mentioned already, but there's wider things going on in terms of, you know, communication between different community projects over utilizing, you know, the new technology like Zoom and things like that. And people talking to each other and you know, I've been involved in those things. And so you're sitting down and saying, well, where are the gaps? Who needs help? There's lots out there. Is there any coordination going on? And what are the things that need to be fed up into the wider system? And that's a more sort of organizational sort of thing. In terms of the community level, I hope it's a progression of that concept about, you know, that there are other people in your community that you need to be aware of, and that if you're in ability to provide support and help and recognize where there are needs are, that, you know, it doesn't need an emergency to make that happen. I sincerely hope, you know, that that it does come out, but it will take a lot of, I don't know, sort of clarity of vision in terms of, you know, enabling that to happen. Really, it can happen, you know, at a local level, you know, hopefully everything. I mean, the Penfield Hub, although we cover the whole of Westminster, we're very much sort of, you know, part of the Church Street neighbourhood, which, you know, so I hope that it's even, the work that has gone on can, you know, get even better and be more sustainable. I was wanted just in following on with the last thing, the whole thing about the value of community projects where funding gets lost, is that, you know, I've always said that, you know, we've had drop-ins in church, we've opened, closed, funding has gone. And I've even said about the Hub, when we lost, you know, the best part of 50% of our funding last year.
Yeah.
And next year we could lose it all. You know, the reality is that local authority funding projects or even charity funding projects are time limited. And what I think people in my role can try to do is try to leave something in its place which carries on, so that people who have engaged, and if the structure is not there, if the funding is not there, like the art group, you know, they lost their duty, but they carried on in the room which we provided, and they organised all of them, and now they've lost a building because of the virus, but they carried on using WhatsApp and so forth. And, you know, visions of you know, if the hub was closed, maybe they could carry on using a table in a local cafe or going around to somebody's house. And it's about the empowerment of the community to be able to take, you know, having given the opportunity to, you know, come together. So you do that, not to maintain that in the same way, but to leave something that people independently can carry on and maintain that sort of social contact and that, you know, and that ability to be able to do, you know, real things in their life, which makes, you know, life a lot better than it might have been.
Well, that's incredible. I mean, it shows such resilience, doesn't it, to be knocked back and say we're going to continue, another knockback. Another thing that I thought was really interesting about what you just said was, and I wonder what you think about this, but I was thinking, actually, to an extent, we have all been, I was saying to my friend the other day, everyone in the country was forced to learn to use Zoom, even those of us that didn't use that for working. So actually, it feels like we have, you know, perhaps we've all, not just older people, but all of us, been forced to engage with technology and digital resources in a way that's actually been quite beneficial, it sounds like.
I think it is to an extent. I think I'd be the first person to say that all the stuff we're doing, we're not able to reach deep down into the community, to the people who are very isolated and who are not, you know, one of the things, we do a lot of digital inclusion work, but I think one of the things the last, you know, 6 weeks have shown me is that in terms of Church Street, in terms of like the, if I use the word older people, that the level of engagement with modern technology is extremely low, and that they're not even like a telephone discussion group, or, you know, we do activities by Zoom, but they're not engaged in that. And I, you know, from a very low resource project, I had to take a view from the very beginning. There are people out there, you know, volunteers, projects who are engaging with people on a door-to-door basis, making sure they've got food, you know, obviously doing it all safely and all of that, but they're engaged. But we're not able to do that because people need to have a degree of confidence about using technology. I mean, that out in terms of moving forward in the future, just, you know, for us to increase our efforts and to enable more people to be able to benefit from things like technology. But there is still, you know, a fairly, in terms of the older generation, you know, it's not unusual for us to have you know, people coming with smartphones that have been given by their family members and not even having opened the box with the smartphone. And to a point when, you know, we found out that in the last couple of weeks that many people were using smartphones to receive calls from family members but had never actually making a call on the smartphone. And you know, so I think you're right in terms of we have been forced. I mean, I've got grave doubts about that. I mean, I wouldn't want technology taken away from normal human relationships in every way, and all the pressure. I mean, I hear people saying, "Oh, now that everybody's used to doing their shopping by internet, that they can do it in the future." And I said, no, we don't want that to happen. We want the ability to do that, but we want people to be able to go into their local shop and meet their neighbours and talk. Staff in the shop. We don't want the whole of society, or not the whole of society, but we don't want large groups of people, particularly people who are relatively isolated, being shunted into IT technology stuff because it's easier doing it that way.
And also, I don't think people should be forced to, whatever their age, actually. I'm really appreciative. I personally don't like Zoom. I find it a little bit discombobulating when there's loads of faces on a screen and when it's lots of people. But I know some people really love it. But a colleague of mine basically made a really good point. She basically said it shouldn't be the only option. And so I've been very much focusing, as you know, Dennis, on non-digital delivery, on like I've doing various postal projects with various different groups. Because what I think it's really important for people not to feel that they're useless or they can't do something because they don't engage digitally. But I'm hoping that when we come out of this, actually we might be able to keep the best of both worlds. So we might be able to say, do you know what? It's really handy having a WhatsApp group to swap pictures on. Let's keep that. But let's not forget the joy of meeting in a room together.
But I think you're right, and I think it might mean us, whereas in the past we're putting a lot of pressure on the technology side to get people involved in using their smartphones and their tablets and that. I think we may have to swing it the other way around, for saying, oh yes, all of that's there. Let's now make sure we create spaces for people to meet, you know, safe spaces. So, like, you know, the tendency is in the type of society we live in, which is, you know, developing technology to the incredible degree, is that we push everybody in that direction. But we also, I mean, no matter how well you do Zoom, it's not the same sort of, you know, relationship with people, even at a work or a professional level, as you might have with them sitting across the room and chatting about this sort of thing. So we might have to say, yes, we'll do all the work around the technology to get it to those groups of people who currently don't use it. But it does worry me at times when I see, you know, oh, so much stuff is available, but only if you can use, you know, the web or things like that.
I think initially we as in all of us, were just thinking, how can we manage this? And it was sort of the path of least resistance. But interestingly, I've had conversations with teenagers, and of course the common myth around teenagers is that everything is about their phones, but actually that my friend's teenage children have been talking about how much they miss meeting their friends and they're sick of their phones. So it's I think coming out we might be able to rebalance this. I'm quite looking forward to the conversation continuing. What's useful, what isn't useful, and that thing you just said about making sure we've still got spaces to meet, bravo to that. I think we're going to be dying to. Everyone keeps saying to me, I can't wait to just hold someone's hand or give them a hug, you know, it's amazing. I just wanted to talk to you a little bit. This is probably also quite a difficult question to answer, but I've been thinking about sort of hope in relation to our personal hopes that we can have about getting older, and actually thinking about how we can perhaps develop as a society and culturally and personally having a better relationship with our ageing selves, and to possibly even to think about looking forward to getting older, as in celebrating the positives that there are about that, of which there are many. And I wondered, well, first of all, would you agree with me that there are things to look forward to about being older?
Yes, says he with some hesitation. Yes, there is. I think... you know, it's sort of, I think it's often might depend on the person. I think it often might depend on the person in terms of their sort of economic, the place in sort of in society, their economic place in society. And I think, you know, if we were talking, if one was would hope for a society, I think it would be about, you know, sort of a society that would welcome older people. Or I personally take the view is that, you know, the idea about sort of about having choices in life generally, I mean, is often dominated by, you know, economic necessity. But having choice of life of stopping and doing things, you know, differently, you know, which I've done in the past. I've taken some time off work for, you know, at one stage looking after my grandkids or something like that. And then going back in and doing things like that and reach a stage and the alternative the end point of that is a process when you get to an older age is that you don't necessarily have to feel that there's a retirement date or there's a date when you, you know, stop doing things, and that you sort of there is an ability to ability to absorb or to have opportunities for older people to do things with. So like from a more sort of standard, like, you know, of the retirement. I mean, it is very you know, sort of, what's the word, trying to think of, like, fuzzed at the moment, that, you know, that it's you know, the way things are going, people might not necessarily be economically able to stop work as they might have been in the past and doing that even on reduced resources and that, but people might take decisions in life to stay on because there are reasons in terms of just, you know, money and that, whereas other people, you know, might stay on working in terms of the value that they feel that they get from actually working, you know, whether in a voluntary or in a paid capacity. And so like a slightly different role for the older person, not the more to that traditional sort of industrial idea that at age 60 or 65 or 70 that you actually stop working and then use. The choice should be there.
So yeah, I agree. It doesn't feel quite fit for purpose anymore because as you and I both know, having many older friends and colleagues, it really varies. You can be 70 and running a marathon, or you can be 70 and in quite poor health, exactly the same as you can be at 35. So it feels like it's fairer to have a sort of variety of possibilities on offer. And I think also I didn't mean to make light of people's in economic circumstances. Of course, if you're looking at really struggling financially, it's harder to look forward to a retirement on reduced circumstances. But I think it's part of what we need to take an opportunity to look at now we've had this big pause that the pandemic's provided. You know, let's look at our whole lives and how we can enjoy them and make the most of them the whole way through. So I'm really hoping that getting older is part of that conversation, especially as people have been made aware of older people because they've been in the news more, basically. So I'm hoping.
I think so, and I think one of the sort of the problems in terms of the issues facing the role of older people in the current situation is the sense that, you know, decisions are being taken or appear to be taken or will be taken around, the necessity of older people, people 70 plus and all that to be, shielded is like to do with people's long-term health conditions. In Ireland, where I come from, the decision was taken by the government that everybody over 70 should be, they called it cocooning in Ireland, and not shielding. My brother, who's just 6 months short of 70, he decided, well, what's 6 months in terms of being safe? So I will be cocooned, although he gradually gave up after a while. It wasn't a legal thing. It was an advisory thing. And as far as I know, most older people sort of respected it. But that was like cocooning was, in essence, not going shopping, not going for a walk, certainly not meeting up with family members. And that has a major sort of like impact on people's life, on their, you know, on their family relationships, on their mental health, on their emotional well-being, and that, you know. So the current thing, I mean, there's someone I heard yesterday talking about that there would be an element in which older people might not be able to start doing social interaction as they have done it until September 2021, you know, and I know that's an extreme view, but it was based on the likelihood of having a vaccine and it actually working.
Yeah.
It's a big issue without, for us, isn't it?
Yeah.
In terms of our projects and for open stages and that, is when we can reach a point when people can start together again.
Yeah, though I'm trying to, and the same as you, Dennis, it sounds like, I'm trying to think, okay, look, these are the circumstances, let's accept the circumstances and respond as creatively as possible. I know you have amazingly as well. I mean, it's just like, let's do what we can and also accept that we're trying out new things, aren't we, Dennis? So it might not work, but it's okay. We're just trying it out. So I think
you're absolutely right. And it's a conversation I have with people all the time, saying it's not necessarily when will we go back to where we were 6-8 weeks ago, but when will we go to a place where we're feeling that we're actually engaging more with people, that we're having, that we're able to resume relationships with people, whether it's family or community or, you know, your local centre, whatever it is. And that will take quite a lot of thinking out and, planning and looking at different ways of doing things. And again, using some of the imagination that people have used over the last 6-8 weeks and that. But it's about, let's think, well, what can we do?
Exactly.
Rather than, well, we can't do what we did do, therefore we'll do nothing. But it's about, let's, it's the same way as you said about, you know, something like an art group, like getting, sort of losing funding and then losing the building, and then they find a way of doing it. It's, well, let's find another way of doing it, bringing us back into, you know, a relationship which doesn't depend on technology and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's just an amazing, I'm really staggered and encouraged by the creativity, the resilience and the imagination of people's responses. Actually, people haven't been defeated. They've responded really brilliantly, which is very encouraging. I just wanted to ask you a little bit as well, not to underestimate or diminish the loss and the grief that there's been in the thick of all of this terrible time. I'm also interested in sort of acknowledging the importance of noticing what it has given us as well. And I know that's different for everybody and their circumstances, but I just wondered if there are any changes that have happened, and there might not be, Dennis, I appreciate that, during this time of the lockdown, that have been positive, that you feel have been positive or beneficial for you personally or for you in your professional life, that you've thought, actually, I quite like that change. That's been quite positive.
Well, I think, yeah, certainly in terms of like family context, like my brother and sister live in Dublin, so I think we certainly upped the level of phone calls we made, particularly my brother. I'm closer to my sister than I am to my brother, and so it's been good, like having increased level of contact, and as well, I mean, that is sort of like that part of that is dealing with day-to-day issues and that, but also like looking forward, like, you know, when will we meet up again? Like, we had, you know, tend to follow regular patterns about summer holidays, which may not happen this year, and then we like Christmas and things like that. So you sort of and my brother is also 70 this year, so that would have been a fairly big party, and we sort of partially avoid talking specifics, not totally avoid talking specifics, but like, you know, talking about sort of perhaps talking more about how we're looking forward to those sort of coming up. And my niece is expecting a baby next week, and my nephew's partner is expecting a baby in September, and you know, so like when we do meet up again, it'll be a bigger sort of it'll be a bigger family in one sense, but a much more sort of like enhanced degree of just emotion, really, just in terms of
It feels really wonderful to have those things to look for. I was just thinking it just does feel very, very encouraging to have those things to look forward to, doesn't it?
Yeah, and also with my own family here in London, my son and his wife and the two grandkids, we were all due to go. My daughter-in-law's from Krakow, one of the most beautiful places in the world, and so we were going back there. We hadn't been back for about 4 or 5 years, and the summer holidays would have been partly spent there, so that's gone now. But you know, again, talking about that and when will it happen and all that sort of stuff, you know, so is all that that's I suppose I think we're more conscious about the value of those relationships, and when we get together, perhaps where we may have been sort of like, oh well, it's Christmas, we'll all meet up, but now like it is with an extra sort of degree of anticipation and love and that sort of, you know, so so it's very, very, very big things. Greater sort of greater awareness of those relationships and perhaps more. I think as well, there's going to be a bit around particularly for us oldies about notwithstanding the horrors that have been going on, and it just staggering like day by day, but in a sense that, I don't know whether it's luck or whatever, that we've survived it. I know people who've passed on, and no one very close in a sense of family, but, you know, it's just like, it is a horror, and we look back at it as that, and, we managed to come through it, you know, at least this, you know, so far and everything like that, but that sense of just that sense of togetherness a degree of survival, I suppose.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I genuinely feel gratitude for so many things, and reminded of what to be thankful of all the time, and appreciative, and quite enjoying that. If it doesn't sound too mawkish, just to feel sort of grateful for what I've got and appreciate for what I've got and that I've survived. As you said, it's a really important thing to say, I think. Sort of feels like a way of honouring people that haven't done so well at all, haven't survived. So, yeah. That's slightly esoteric, this, I suppose, but in a more general way, Dennis, because as I said, I'm sort of focusing and thinking about hope, which feels like a really useful thing to focus on at the moment with all these changes going on. I wondered where you find hope, if you need to find it, or how you help yourself if you're feeling particularly pessimistic or despairing to get yourself out of that.
To be honest, I think I'm very fortunate because I think I see hope all over the place, particularly in terms of my work. You know, in that every sort of working with sort of, you know, amazing projects, amazing people like yourself and like all the other tutors we have and the people who've been on the phone. Everybody sort of, there's a couple of things you mentioned, you know, in terms of hope, is in terms of what's going on. You mentioned the word about resilience, and I'm, you know, found tremendous hope in how resilient people have been, the people I've been talking to on the phone, ringing up. We have like a target about 40, 45 people a week to ring up, and that discussion group with the sewing. And so I think, you know, I maybe sort of slightly lose hope when I think about politics, but I don't, you know, sort of, I think I've been fortunate in terms of, you know, hope in terms of, when you asked me earlier on, think of some key things, certainly this one's going through my head, and I must mention it, is that, you know, we have this opera group that comes in and does opera, and we have a number of people living at Penfold who have got a significant degree of dementia, and including this particular woman who sort of would, you know, sit in these concerts and say nothing, but the person running the concert came up and took the person by the hand and got him to stand up beside her and started singing. And this woman who didn't say very much, didn't talk virtually anything, just started singing with an incredibly beautiful voice. And you know, and that, and things like that. And I look back, and I you know, we started to. You remember Katrina, who used to work with us, like, yeah. We call it golden moments, and we'd always say at the end of the day, did we have a golden moment today? And fortunately, we used to have quite a few. And there, in a sense, so all that sort of stuff, as I say, leaving aside, you know, politics and that, but in terms of, you know, seeing those things, seeing how resilient people are, seeing that simple little things, you know, that can have an impact on people who are on the edge of what's going on, not the main core group. You know, there's always the people who want to, you know, who are well organized and well motivated, but at the edge, there's always people. And it's about engaging. There's a person coming in phase two of the current Open Stages project, who, again, I think I'm so pleased she's joined, because, again, she was the quiet person at the back. She's a different person, the person I talked about. She was the quiet person at the back of the room who, you know, sort of lacked confidence and had a very extremely high degree of anxiety. But again, like, you know, and so, like, that's the next step, isn't it? Like, you know, she's now obviously engaged with you in terms of the packs going to her house and that sort of thing. Does that answer your question? Because
Beautifully. I love that golden moments thing.
Love it as well. Yeah. Petra's idea. She and we, you know, it's just like, and that's about, you know, that's without going off another time. It's like, when you work in centres like Penfold, sometimes you have down times, but it's also important as a group of staff to value your up times and, you know, creating these golden moments these things would not have happened unless somebody put some, you know, and all these things are never just one person. You know, people think that, you know, are very, you know, praiseworthy of what I do at the Hub, but I you know, say that, you know, they're doing it themselves in most cases. You can build up partnerships, which is with yourself and with all that at all. And then, but in the end of the day, it's the group themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that makes it stronger and more powerful, doesn't it? Recognising it's not a person, actually. It's a group of us. That for me, that's really hopeful, because then if anyone's having a bad day, it's okay, because there's 20 more people. So it's not, the weight isn't on it. And it's kind of leaderless, ideally, in a way, isn't it?
It's built on the strength of individuals in the community. You know, it's about, you know, once people start to feel as though they've got something to contribute, they will start contributing, and that contribution is is, you know, invaluable, isn't it? It's just, it can be a phone call, or it can be stopping in the street to have a chat, or it can be someone ringing up and saying, you know, I'm concerned about somebody or something like that, or it can be, you know, a contribution when we have fundraising days. People are very generous, you know, and you know, when people will, you know, help out in all sorts of different ways. There's, you know, there's behind the scenes, like in any community project, there's lots of people doing stuff, and you know, not necessarily getting, they're not necessarily seeking rewards or praise for it, but they're just doing their own little bit. I mean, people bring in old flower pots. Yes, why not? It's there. I'm a great believer, by the way, I should say, in participation as a concept. Mm-hmm. I did some work some years ago about with an artist at the showrooms about the concept of what it means. And I said, someone coming, sitting, reading a book in the garden is participating.
Yeah, absolutely. And people need to be able to do it in the way that's right for them, which can be as quiet as sitting and keeping company, isn't it?
And because somebody sits on the committee and is very good at getting resource on that, it's they are a participant as well as the person who comes in. And I mean, even like someone coming in and saying, oh, you know, as we do fortunately get people, oh, it's a wonderful, I just feel so good, you know, haven't been 5 minutes walking around the garden, you know. So, you know, that it's all made up of those small little things and all those social contacts and social and sort of awareness of things, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely beautiful. I love all that stuff. Just before we go, Dennis, I wanted to ask you if this is appropriate, if there's, if anyone's listening would like to either find you or support Penfold Community Hub, how they might do that?
Well, perhaps if email address would be, is that okay?
Yes,
that,
sure.
We do need funding, as you can imagine, after the last year. So we're a charity. We're part of Notting Hill Genesis. We're a charity.
Yeah.
And so the easiest way is to make contact with us. So the email address is penfoldhub, that's all one word, PENFOLDHUB, at nhg.org.uk. NHG is the abbreviation for Notting Hill Genesis. So penfoldhub at nhg.org.uk. And that's our generic email address of the project.
And otherwise, when you're open, might somebody just be able to pop along? Is that allowed?
By all means, email and arrange time, but not generally popping around.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, because we're based on activities, so people only come when there's an activity going on.
Sure, that makes perfect sense.
There might be, when there's not, there would be no staff there to greet them and that. And it is, you know, also residential accommodation.
Sure. And does Penfold have a website, Dennis?
Well, yes, if you go on to Notting Hill Genesis,
yep,
the housing trust that we're part of, and then go into community and you'll then type in Penfold Community Hub. It's a very generic website. It doesn't give an awful lot of up-to-date information, and certainly out-of-date at the moment, but you'll get some information and stuff.
And I'll make sure that all of those addresses and all that information is in the copy of the podcast as well, if people want to have a look there. So, Dennis, thank you so much for taking time to talk to me. It's been an absolute delight.
You're very welcome.
It's so lovely.
Thank you very much for asking me.
I miss you all, but hopefully we'll meet again.
We will.
Bye, my lovely.
Take care. Bye-bye.
For listening, if you're interested in what we got up to at the Royal Albert Hall with Open Stages, which was a project between the residents and participants in Penfold Community Hub, where Dennis works, and also students from King Solomon Academy School, you can check it out on the Royal Albert Hall website and on my Flickr album, and I'll leave both the details of that on the copy for the podcast. Look forward to meeting up with you next time. Thanks for listening. Bye.